From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We know the standard hallmarks of the American dream. A house, a car, a white picket fence if you like, and enough prosperity to buy things. Lots of things. Now, there's a movement of Americans who are pushing back against that dream, saying that the pursuit of money and stuff isn't enough, or it's too much. It isn't fulfilling. They're saying they want to opt out and live a minimalist life. Many are millennials. They've got their reasons. This hour On Point, celebration of the minimalist life and how that's going. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you ready to simplify, to pare back, opt out, minimalize? Are you already there? How's it going? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from Missoula, Montana are Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. They are self-styled minimalists who took the plunge themselves. Authors of Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life, and Essential, Essays by the Minimalists and Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists. You see, they're working it here. The blog, they blog at theminimalist.com, produced the documentary Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, coming out in May. You can find the trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. Joshua Fields Milburn and Mr. Nicodemus, Ryan, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey, Tom.
Okay, you guys did this. We know the story. You were working. You were in your 20s. You were making out pretty darn well. And for each of your own reasons, you were friends from childhood, but you decided, no, this isn't the way to go. And off you went to the land of minimalism. Is this something about the millennial experience that encouraged you and others around you? It seems to me that millennials are taking a particular interest in this. It's not a U-turn, but it's a sharp turn away from what was kind of cookie-cutter standard way of living. Is there a millennial challenge driving it?
You know, I think that it's certainly appealing to millennials, but we've met literally thousands, tens of thousands of people at this point who this message has been appealing to, and it's from people from all different demographics. At some of our events, we've had a 93-year-old woman bring several generations of daughters, even her great-granddaughter. We had a 13-year-old boy bring his father and say, you know, I think you can find some value from this minimalist lifestyle. And it's appealing to anyone who's trying to live more intentionally. And I think with the sort of information that we have out there right now, more and more people are finding, you know what, this template that we've been sold, this meme of the American dream, it's not necessarily our dream. And there are other templates out there by which we can live a more deliberate life.
Ryan, do you think there's a generational difference in how people approach this?
I mean, speaking to millennials specifically, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of them about why they have chosen to go down this journey. And usually the response comes from watching their parents kind of work themselves to death, never being home, constantly working on paying off debt and kind of being tied to a corporate job or any job that is requiring 60, 70, 80 hours of work from them. And they're looking at that and they're saying, yeah, I don't want to do that. I want to have my time. I want to have more freedom. I don't want to be tied to debt. So going back to the generational thing, I don't think there is any difference between millennials versus the great-grandmother that Joshua was talking about. I think everyone is asking the same question. How can I live a more meaningful life?
Joshua, in your case, the way you guys come at this is not just about decluttering, though that is part of it, but it's not just about tidying up. I mean, you left jobs. You're sort of get off the rat race as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the rat race is if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. What I found when I was in my late 20s, I was 28 years old, and up until that point, I was very successful by cultural standards. I was living the American dream, the big house, the six-figure salary, and all the trinkets of success. But even though I was supposed to be successful, I didn't feel fulfilled. I didn't feel a sense of purpose or joy in what I was doing necessarily. And for me, it started with the stuff, and I started letting go of sort of the excess stuff that was in the way. I'd worked so hard to accumulate all these things that were supposed to make me happy, but those things weren't doing their job. And so as I started letting go, I started feeling freer and happier and lighter. And then the people at work started noticing too. They'd say things like, wow, you seem so much less stressed. You seem so much calmer. What is going on with you? You seem so much nicer. And so I started, you know, showing these benefits of minimalism. I never jumped up and said, look at me, I'm becoming a minimalist. But I noticed that once I cleared the excess, the stuff was sort of the initial bite at the apple. I think that any of our listeners here, that they could go home and rent a dumpster, throw all their stuff in it, and be utterly miserable. And that's because it's not about just getting rid of the stuff. That isn't going to inherently make you happy. It's about making room for what's truly important, things like our health or our relationships, or finding something we're passionate about and cultivating that passion, finding ways to grow, finding ways to contribute to our community. These are the bedrocks of a more meaningful life. And it's less about the consumption. It's more about what we fill our life with after we get rid of the superfluous.
Ryan, what counts as minimalism? And how low does the bar have to go before you see somebody as a minimalist? We've got lots of people responding to us here. Kat says, I'm a year into downsizing to 220 square feet. I wish I had done it sooner. That is that sounds minimal to me. Lee writes to us, when my mother had stage 4 lung cancer, I sold my house in Nashville, quit my job, took care of her until she passed. That was just over a year ago. I just sold my truck this morning. Now I'll live on the road with my motorcycle and what I can carry with me, and I love it.
Wow.
Those sound minimal to me. How low do you have to go to be a minimalist?
You know, Tom, I wish there was this perfect recipe that I could give you that would fit you and every single listener right now. I wasn't a minimalist until I said I was. You know, we're the minimalists because, you know, the domain was available for $7 and we started writing about
that's
our
minimal
journeys. You know, we started writing about our journeys there. But when we started this, the first thing I noticed about minimalism was that there wasn't any one particular recipe. The first person that I was introduced to was a guy named Colin Wright. He was writing about how he owned like 52 things and how he was able to travel the world because he was able to keep his possessions light. So he had to travel light. And that made sense to me. Like, yeah, I don't want to only own 52 things. I certainly like having a dining room table. I like, you know, having a couch. But Colin, you know, he wouldn't be able to bring a couch with him on the airplane. So he doesn't own things like that. So for me, for someone to be a minimalist, really it's the first step is looking at this philosophy and saying, yes, this is what I want to start doing with my life and I want to start living more deliberately. I mean, for me, that's what minimalism really is. It's about people living deliberate lives.
Joshua, you started by tossing stuff out. I don't remember the rate at which you tossed it out, but what's the connection between that and finding a deliberate, meaningful focus?
Did you know that the average American household has more than 300,000 items in it? And so and we have this attachment to all of these things. It's so hard to let go because of these three words that we always employ. We always say, I'll hold on to that just in case. Just in case. The three most dangerous words in the English language.
Oh, yeah. I have found T-shirts from 19, you know, God knows when. Just in case I need a T-shirt. They're just sitting
right
there.
Yeah. Well, I used to weigh 80 pounds more than I weigh now. I wasn't very focused on my health. And it was weird. Once I lost the weight and I had smaller clothes, I was holding on to those, you know, the fat guy clothes just in case I got fat one day again, which is a terrible plan. Yeah. I think we hold on to so many things, and that's why the average American household has 300,000 items. And so I started really small. I let go of one item a day over the course of 30 days. I said, well, what would happen? And so I start with a bunch of questions there. The first question was, how might my life be better if I owned less? And the reason I asked that question is I wanted to understand the benefits of simplifying. I think we all understand fundamentally how to declutter our closets or whatever. What I was more concerned with is the why to. What's the purpose behind simplifying? And so I knew that if I let go, got the excess out of the way, I'd be less tied to maybe a career. I'd have more time. I'd have better health. I'd have more control of my finances. And ultimately, I'd just have more control of my life. And so I started to let go. And you know what? The end result was I got rid of way more than 30 items in the first 30 days because as you get momentum, letting go gets easier by the day. And so you know, a few DVDs led to me deep sixing an entire library of discs. A few T-shirts from the 90s led to me decluttering almost an entire closet. And you know, then my junk drawers started to shed their adjective. And I realized that as I let go, there were all these things that weren't actually adding value to my life. And over the course of about 8 months, I got rid of about 90% of my possessions. Although I think if you were to walk into my home today, you wouldn't walk in and say, "Oh my God, this guy is a minimalist." You'd walk in and say, "Wow, he's pretty tidy," because I don't own a lot of stuff, but everything I do own, it serves a purpose. All of my possessions, you know, bring me joy or they add value to my life. And that's really what I'm focused on now. It's not about just getting the excess out. It's about having things in my life that truly serve a purpose or bring me joy.
Are you hanging on to that, Ryan, or now that you've become Zen masters and, you know, famous bloggers at The Minimalist, and you're selling books, is it now all creeping back up and you've got, you know, minimalist junk all over the house?
No, I certainly have incorporated really good habits in my life that has helped me to keep the clutter out. It is certainly an ongoing process, though. There is never an end point. Like I said earlier, there's not a number of possessions that is the goal. I think it's important to every day kind of look at your surroundings and say, is everything where it needs to be? Is this, you know, I'm holding a coffee mug right now. Is this coffee mug adding value? Yeah, it certainly is, but I'm open to it not adding value tomorrow. And that's okay. But yeah, I certainly don't go out and make impulse buys. You know, when that iPhone 6 came out, like my first impulse was to go and upgrade because I could and I could afford it and my contract was up. And then I started thinking about it, like, you know, the phone I have now, it does everything I need it to do, and this isn't going to do anything for me. Now, I'm sure there's a listener
out there
fighting
that can give
me a million reasons
right.
why.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about paring down, cutting back, cleaning out, simplifying life with the minimalists, Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, the guys who did it and now evangelize for minimalism. Do you feel the urge in these winter days to just clear out the clutter? Are you stuck inside with all the evidence of just how much junk you've accumulated? Are you by the beach and thinking, what else do I need? It wasn't just yesterday that people had this on their minds. You go all the way back to 1999, Fight Club. Edward Norton plays the unnamed protagonist, discontented with his consumer lifestyle, his job doing accident assessments for automobile companies. Here he describes feeling imprisoned like he's in an IKEA catalog.
Like so many others, I had become a slave to the IKEA nesting instinct. If I saw something clever, like a little coffee table in the shape of a yin-yang, I had to have it. The Klipsk personal office unit, the Hovatrek home exerbike. I'd flip through catalogs and wonder, what kind of dining set defines me as a person? We used to read pornography. Now it was the Horchow collection.
Not just Fight Club. Same year, 99, American Beauty, Kevin Spacey, Annette Bening. He's about to spill beer on the sofa.
You're going to spill beer on the couch.
So what? It's just a couch.
This is a $4,000 sofa, upholstered in Italian silk. This is not just a couch.
It's just a couch! This isn't life. This is just stuff. And it's become more important to you than living. Well, honey, that's just nuts.
It's just a couch. And here, from the forthcoming documentary, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things, Frank Masha, architect, lives in a small house, proponent of minimalism.
I really think that we've, as a culture, have lost our minds. There's nothing unusual about being a minimalist, except that you've decided somewhere that the thing is you're going to try and be in control of the stuff.
It's really the work to pare down, to simplify, to get rid of stuff. We have a listener writing to us here. Then, well, on the other hand, people wonder how far. April says, I'm for downsizing, living small on Facebook here, but not to a silly level of downsizing like those tiny homes they're building today, which look very uncomfortable and cramped. Where's the right place to be here with intentionality and not too much stuff weighing you down? Melissa in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Melissa, you're on the air with Ryan and Joshua.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I'm 46 years old, and I've started embracing this lifestyle recently, but I feel that the younger generation, the millennials, get it because the world is calling for people to simplify because we are over-consuming and in the process kind of degrading our environment. And I think that it's almost a subconscious level that the younger generation has kind of embrace that, and I think that my generation kind of feels like we've missed the boat because we've bought into all that, and now we're trying to scale it back, and we have kids and college and homes and stuff that's just kind of become almost, it is like a prison.
How many kids do you have, Melissa, if I may ask?
I have four. I have one in college, and my youngest is four.
Wow, that's a span. Are you able with that span of children to steer toward minimalism or your version of it?
I think so. I mean, it's my version. I'm starting to recycle. I don't throw things out and get rid of things just because I want new stuff. It's really hard because, you know, having new things really does, you know, momentarily give you immediate value. But I realize, so like now I've been driving my car since 2008 and after my loan was paid up and I was all ready to go back in, and I've just started to rethink all this stuff and say, what really matters? And it's not working for things. It's really the quality of life and how you contribute to making the world a little bit of a better place by being more conscious of the things you do. And so I'm trying really hard, and my kids, I've kept TVs out of their room and they don't have iPhones, and I do more meaningful things with them instead of buying them gifts. So I think like he said, there's no one fit for everybody,
yep.
But I think we can all, you know, find our way to do things differently.
Melissa, I'm really happy to hear from you. I mean, Joshua and Ryan, Abby writes, with kids, it's difficult when you have children and your in-laws don't respect your desire to not constantly be bringing made-in-China gimmicky pieces of crap toys into the house. I've been made to feel like a curmudgeon. It's a constant struggle. What about when people have families and loving in-laws who want to bring some toys to the house?
No doubt about it. We've also been sold another meme here that gift-giving is a love language. I think that's like saying Pig Latin is a romance language. but, you know, I look at all these different recipes for simplifying our lives, and that was one of the things that was really appealing to me early on when I noticed there were all these different people who were minimalists. Ryan mentioned earlier a guy named Colin Wright, a world traveling entrepreneur, single guy. But then I found people like Eva and Leo Babalta, and they have six kids, and they're an entire minimalist family, and we interviewed them for our documentary as well. And what we learned is that there are all these different recipes, and you're right, it is more difficult if you have children, if you have a spouse, if you have people in your life that you live with. It's much more difficult to become a minimalist, but it's so much more important because we're getting that stuff out of the way so we can focus on them. We can allocate our time to the people in our lives. We can allocate our time to our health. We can allocate our time to what is important instead of amassing more trinkets to supposedly make us happy.
And yet you have to make a life. I mean, you guys left jobs. Not everybody can, you know, leave their job and go off and blog about minimalism. I want to talk about that. Jesus is calling from Miami, Florida. Jesus, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I want to say first that I'm a millennial, and I would like to ask Josh and Ryan, how do you balance minimalism with maximalism? And what I mean by maximalism is maximizing income, maximizing the amount of vacations you could take, maximizing value in your life. How do you find like a balance to maintain minimalism and do that maximalism?
So it's not just a retreat from everything in a way. Ryan, Josh?
Yeah, you know, we certainly didn't just quit our jobs and start a blog. If anyone gives that advice, head for the hills. That's the worst advice anyone could give. It took us took Josh about a year. It took me about a year and a half of really focusing on paying off debt, getting rid of my condo loan, my car loan, downsizing to the point where I could live off of a barista type job. And I'll tell you, when I left my corporate job, September 2012, we went on tour with our book, Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life, towards the end of that year and into the next year, the following year. We went to, I believe it was like 28 cities. I made less money that year than I have ever made in my life. And we were still able to travel around and go on that tour. We were sleeping on floors and couches and making do with what we had. But we had the time of our lives. We got so much value out of that. We grew so much. We helped other people get value, helped them grow so much. But ultimately, to that question of, you know, how do you maximize your time? How do you maximize your you mentioned vacations. It's still completely possible to do that if you are living deliberately, if you are keeping light. It's much easier to do that if you have less stuff in your life, you have less tying you down, right? We think of someone as an anchored person, and that's usually a good thing. But sometimes those anchors keep us at bay, and that's really what minimalism is about. It's deciding which anchors are keeping us at bay and what which ones are adding value.
Cynthia in Beaufort, South Carolina. Cynthia, you're on the air with Joshua and Ryan.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. I have been working on this in my life for some time. My children were born. I realized I was doing too much. I quit my job. I was able to do that because my husband works, but we live simply. I drive an old car, and we're constantly just trying to simplify. We don't, you know, no vacations and or, you know, cheap vacations.
Yep.
We just went on a vacation in a tent. One way that I found that it's made a big difference for me is cutting back on, or I've never had a Facebook account, which I know is crazy, but I just stay out of the fray. It drives people crazy. I get mocked by my friends, you know, lovingly, but just keeping out of all of the hubbub, and it's hard. I mean, I find it a daily struggle just to live simply, and I don't feel that I'm a champion of it. But just by trying, I feel that I've radically changed the lives of my family and my own life. By just trying always to do less, have less, and just focus on my family and just being outside. I mean, just simple stuff. It's been so amazing for us.
Keep it very simple. I appreciate your call, Cynthia. I mean, Ryan and Joshua, how much of what you're promoting here is cutting back on stuff? And how much is opting out of jobs or Facebook or the hubbub?
Sure. You know, it's really about living more intentionally. I think that's what's synonymous with minimalism is focusing on what are the things that add value to my life. So whether it's a Facebook account or you're on Twitter or you're consuming a new material good, it's determining, is this going to add value to my life? Can I afford it? And is this the best use of my resources? And we start with money. You know, that's usually the most obvious resource. What's the price tag of something? But then there are all these other resources like our time and our attention. Those are our most precious resources. And then if we're going to bring new things into our life, if it's a physical thing, can I afford the space that this is going to take up? Can I afford the amount of time that I'm going to take care of this thing, to clean it, to improve it, to do whatever? And those are all things that we need to take into account. The cost of the things we bring into our life is usually far exceeds the actual price tag that to start with.
Garrett writes to us, says, the older I get, the less I own or want to own. When I moved to North Carolina, whatever didn't fit in the back of my truck did not come with me. A truck bed of books, vinyl records, a couple boxes of clothes, and my mountain bike. What more do you need in life? And if I moved tomorrow, it would all still fit. That's an accomplishment. Frank in Norwood, Massachusetts. Frank, you're on the air.
How you doing, guys?
Okay. Howdy.
Just to touch base with you and kind of bring up the aspect of mindfulness in living minimalistically. I think there's a huge connection. I know coming back from my return from Afghanistan back in 2011, that was kind of a big thing for me of trying to minimize my life because my life was very simple overseas. And I think there's a big kind of combination between the two of them of living very simply and being happy and not being distracted by the superfluous stuff that exists within our lives. So I'll take my response off the air. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Frank. What do you say, guys?
First off, thank you for your service. Really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And what I'd say is, to this comment and the previous comment, I feel that often you'll talk to people and say, my most meaningful time, my most mindful time, the time that I was happiest is when I was going off to college and everything I owned fit into the back of my truck. But then, of course, life got a hold of me and I started accumulating a bunch of stuff along the way. And you're right, it does keep us from being more mindful because our mind is focused on all of these sort of external inputs. The average person sees 500,000 discrete bits of information every day. And a lot of that is the bombarding of messages that we need more stuff. And that doesn't allow us to be mindful. But I found that the material possessions are a physical manifestation of what's going on inside us. So by being willing to let go of the external stimuli, we're able to start focusing on the calming down what is inside, the emotional clutter, the mental clutter, the spiritual clutter, the mindfulness of living a more intentional life.
Matthew, New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Matthew. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if there aren't certain class issues that aren't being talked about here. Tom, you talked about opting out. And I wonder, you know, this is minimalism by choice. I mean, is a homeless person a minimalist? I mean, forced minimalism? I mean, is that the same thing?
That's a good question, and it has been raised right along the way with Joshua and Ryan as well. I mean, Katie Waldman wrote in Slate a couple of years back, she says, it's easy to live with very few things if you can buy whatever you want. Is there a class issue here? You know, oh, it's so great, but if you're homeless, you may need that blanket in the bottom of the grocery cart.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, Ryan and I grew up really poor back in Dayton, Ohio, food stamps and government help. But what I learned early on is that, you know, we thought we were discontented because we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And while that's true, we were discontented. We didn't have a lot of money, but we were discontented because of repeated poor decisions. And that just compounded throughout our 20s as we both climbed the corporate ladder and started making more and more money. I made really good money by my late 20s, a six-figure salary. I made good money, but I spent even better money. And that equation just never works out. And so I was still discontented because of repeated bad decisions. You know, we live in the most depressed country in the world, and quite often...
Wait, is that true? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the surveys, you know, Pew surveys, they'll show you that up to 14% of the people in the United States are depressed. And you look at other countries like Kenya, where you're going to obviously have considerably less income, but you have far fewer people who are depressed. And we often, you know, chemical depression is one thing, but we often manufacture this discontent by this constant desire of wanting and wanting and more. And we're constantly looking over the shoulder of the thing that we just got in pursuit of the next thing that we won.
Blue Jay writes to us online, why do alcoholics and guys like this always brag about the past? I was so rich. What is the point of putting that bar out there? I was six-figure, and what's the point you're looking to make?
Well, I mean, really, what we're talking about is how we spent so much time focusing on the paycheck. We spent so much time focusing on accumulating that stuff. And there are a lot of people right now who are doing just that. And they are, miserable like we are. And minimalism was something that we used to help regain control of our finances, to help regain control of our time. So when we talk about, oh, yes, we left these six-figure jobs, mm-hmm. It's because we really are trying to set a good example for others. I mean, I think it was the very wise philosopher Jim Carrey who said, mm-hmm. everyone knows that money doesn't buy happiness, but they want to try it out for themselves just to make sure.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, people, they like the comment you mentioned earlier about, well, yeah, of course it's easy to live with less when you can afford everything.
To buy what you need as you go.
Yeah, right, exactly. And Josh and I, what we're saying is yes, we were there. We could, we could pretty much get anything we wanted, and it wasn't making us happy. So minimalism is really, or talking about that stuff is really about us trying to set a good example for others.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about paring down, cutting back, cleaning out, simplifying life with the minimalists, Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, the guys who did it and now evangelize in their way for minimalism. They've got a new documentary coming out soon, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. They're with us today from Missoula, Montana. You can join us as well. What's important about minimalism? What's doable or appealing for you? Have you tried it? How's it going? Is it super cool? Is it scary? And when you clear out all your stuff, what are you making room for? Jay Austin is a tiny house designer. That's been hot lately. In the documentary that Joshua and Ryan have coming out, he talks about people needing to rethink the whole idea of success.
We've gotten so used to thinking about a 40-year career and a 30-year mortgage and maybe 10 years of enjoyment on the back end of a lifetime. I think we've only begun to re-examine what it means to be successful in life. It's no longer that white picket fence. It's no longer that McMansion. I think that people are beginning to recognize that they've maybe been tricked.
Of course, people didn't think of this just yesterday. Here was George Carlin, comedian, in 1986 with his classic stand-up routine about the outsized importance of stuff in our lives.
That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. It's a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Now, sometimes you've got to move. You got to get a bigger house. Why? Too much stuff.
Or maybe you move and clear it out and it just keeps coming back. Joni writes to us, I've been a minimalist many, many times, living in cabins, teepees, tents, a school bus, but I am still a stuff magnet. That magnetism can stick around. Mark in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thank you for calling, Mark. You're on with Joshua and Ryan.
Yeah, as I was talking to the young lady, I'm a maximalist, if that's what you want to call it.
You're a maximalist.
Whatever you can. Yeah, if there's a minimalist, there must be a maximalist.
Okay.
Yeah, why live? Frugality, yes, is good. You can have just the minimum stuff. But going on vacation, taking trips, getting the best things out of life, you only live once. Why are you living so frugal? What's the point? You know, you enjoy the best things of life. And my question to the young lady, why are these guys selling the book? Give the book away.
Okay, why? Joshua Ryan, there's your maximalist from Fort Lauderdale. He wants it all. Bigger the better. More the merrier. Let's go. Why not?
He wants our book for free. What? If you hold on, we'll send you a copy of the book for free. Or you can get it from your local library.
I actually didn't hear that. He wants a big pool, a big yacht, a big vacation. And why not? You live once. What do you say to him?
Yeah, there's certainly nothing wrong with money. I know Ryan and I aren't allergic to money. I think we all have to pay the bills. It's just no longer the primary focus of my life anymore. My life is more centered around what I find to be valuable. And money can certainly accentuate that, but it can also accentuate the bad things as well. So we can go into deep amounts of debt. It can stress us out. We can be overwhelmed. We can be worried by money. Or we can use money as a tool to prepare for our future, to buy the things we need, and also to contribute to the world around us.
Yeah, and I think the term maximalism, I think that could also kind of be implied with minimalism too, because when you get all the superfluous things out of the way, you are able to maximize the most important things in life, whether you know it's relationships or health or cultivating a passion, growing, contributing. It's so funny, someone had made a comment to us. We were on Periscope or something, and they were like, you guys sound like you didn't get rid of anything important. You guys aren't minimalists. But I would say he's right. We didn't get rid of anything that was important. We were able to keep and find out everything that was important in our lives, everything that was adding value. So in a way, it's still maximizing your life.
What about the digital side of this? Ari writes to us, having a small house and fewer material goods does not make a minimalist. How cluttered is your digital life? you can still consume just differently. And a lot of people are mentioning, you know, yeah, you can have a brimming or maybe even crowded or maybe even hoarder style digital life. Do you keep an eye on that?
Absolutely. You know, I'm certainly not a Luddite, but I find that technology can add value to my life or it can really get in the way. And I'm not a stoic either, but sometimes I'll do these little stoical experiments where I will remove something from my life for a temporary period of time. I got rid of television for a month back in 2010. I never brought it back into my life because I found that it was just a huge time suck. And then there are other things. I moved and I didn't have internet for a month. It was the most productive month of my life at not having internet at home, and I decided to never bring it back into my home, and so I still don't have internet there. I got rid of my cell phone for a couple months just to try that out as an experiment. Let me tell you, you learn a lot about your lonely self when you've gotten rid of your TV, your internet, and your cell phone. You've removed all the pacifiers from your life, and I realized that, you know what? I was so reliant on these things, but then I brought the cell phone back into my life because I wasn't trying to deprive myself. Minimalism isn't about deprivation. It's about determining what do I actually get value from. And so when I brought it back into my life, I started using it more deliberately. I removed Facebook from my phone. I removed email from my phone. And now I use it to send text messages or for GPS or to listen to music or, gasp, to use it as a phone.
What? To talk to people? Are you crazy?
Crazy, right?
Elsie in Lake George, New York. Elsie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How about this? Everything you own owns you.
Amen.
Amen.
Ooh, what do you mean, Elsie?
Well, because I'm a recovering hoarder, and I don't do it anymore, but everything you own, you have to shift, you have to take care of, you have to catalog, you have to keep track of, and it's true, everything you own owns you.
Were you literally a hoarder, like where you can't walk through the living room because it's so full
no,
of stuff?
No, I wasn't that bad, but whenever I saw something that appealed to me, I would get it.
If you clear that stuff away for you, Elsie, what does it make room for? What do you do with that freedom from being owned by stuff?
I just enjoy myself. I sew more. I see my kids more. I don't worry about it. It just is not filling my head.
You sound nice and free. I'm prepared to believe it just from the sound of your voice. I appreciate your call.
Oh no, it's the truth.
I'm there.
The more I declutter, the happier I am.
Elsie, I appreciate your call so much. One more, Tanya in Beach Mountain, North Carolina. Tanya, you're on.
Hi there. Yeah, I just want to make the comments that, you know, living minimally also goes hand in hand with living ecologically because it's about less for the planet, too. You know, when you get a plastic bag, you become aware of that plastic never breaks down. Mm-hmm. You know, do I really want to throw this into my home, the earth? And when you start thinking globally, and living for your country, for your planet, I think you're less narcissistic and you think more collectively as a community. It's just a healthier way of being.
So what's the future, Tanya? Are we going to live in tents and have very few possessions and get in harmony with the world?
Well, living smaller, I think, is better, less time cleaning. And when you buy something, you buy it that it's going to last a lifetime, and hopefully it's made in your country, so it didn't have to travel across the earth, across the oceans.
Yeah.
And it's quality. It's just you buy less, so you have, if you are making money, you have more money on hand, and maybe donating it to environmental groups and...
Loud and clear, in some ways as simple as ecological awareness, and it certainly works with that. There's no question. One more, Hallie, Marshall, Missouri. Hallie, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I was just going to stress the importance of minimalism in terms of our children. Every time I go and take a walk in my neighborhood, I see people's garages filled with last year's plastic toys, and the kids may be out just playing with a ball. And I grew up in the 50s, we would just get one sort of good gift, and it was usually something to do outdoors, a bike, a skate, something like that, and there was more interaction with the other neighborhood children. We got exercise, and we didn't want much more, and I sort of always lived that way, always just taking, I like mobile, too, that has something to do with it.
Holly, I appreciate your call as well, and surely we do pass on lessons and lifestyles to our kids. I mean, here's a message online, Joshua Ryan. This is from La Bibliotextress, like the library one, I guess. Pretty much all the major architects and designers in the micro-living minimalist movement are Gen X, which makes sense given the lack of political and economic power in the generation. Do you guys think this is in some way a reflection of, oh, well, look, we haven't really been handed a lot of power and we need an alternate way to approach life, and so here we go?
You know, I think that the idea is certainly not a new one. You could go back to the Stoics from 2,000 years ago. I think what we see with today's version of minimalism is it is a reaction to this sort of industrial and post-industrial era of mass consumption. We've been told that, you know, you can get more things for less money, and you know, there was especially this explosion in the 90s, and so whether that's a Gen X thing or a millennial thing or a baby boomer thing, I think it's once we realize that we went from advertising serving a need to sort of creating this false need, this false desire to consume more. It's a reaction to that. So minimalism is a new reaction using a very old sort of philosophy.
Warren in Delray Beach, Florida. Warren, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for taking my call. And by the way, when I get off, please define millennial for those of us who aren't. I don't have all the cyber junk. I drive a restored 1983 Toyota Cressida. I have simple clothing and so forth, but from the age of 13 on, I became a very dedicated collector of Marvel comics before they even became the huge phenomena they are now,
okay,
which led to a career with the company and then doing exhibits and sharing them through lectures and teaching in schools and doing projects for books and magazines.
Where are you going here, Warren? What's the point you make with that?
So I have a lot of stuff, but it's not so much because I'm a compulsive consumer as a dedicated lover of stories, art, and media, and life would be rather empty without those things.
Okay, so Ryan, Joshua, are you telling Warren he's got to get rid of all the comic books that he adores?
You know, I wouldn't tell anyone to get rid of anything. I apply this to myself and I talk about it. But what I'll say is at our events, people will come up to us and they will inevitably bring up some type of collection. You know, someone will come up to us and say, I've got all these books. I've got a library of books that I just love. I love opening the pages and smelling them. And my friends will come over and they will borrow a book. Then they bring it back. And when they bring it back, we have a delightful conversation about the book. And, you know, I'm not a minimalist like you because I've got so many books and I don't think I can get rid of them. And usually what I'll say to those people is, it sounds like those books add a lot of value to your life. Keep your books. For me, having a library of books or having a collection of comics isn't going to add a lot of value. Now, I do think that collecting can certainly touch on the border of hoarding. I mean, collecting and hoarding is synonymous. But I do think that if it is done intentionally, then yeah, certainly a collection of something can add value.
And Warren, of course, millennials, I mean, it's pretty broad, but anybody sort of coming into adulthood around the turn of the century with a pretty broad frame around that. I wonder where you guys see this going. You know, we had utopian movements, many of them in this country over the centuries, and many of them went away. Are you like the new Shakers, or is this something you see really taking hold, becoming more than a thread in the American fabric, becoming a bigger part of the way Americans look at the world?
Well, I know that if the world consumed like Americans, we would need over four Earths to keep up with the consumption. And we don't have four Earths. So I do know that there is a call right now. We all know there's a call for the environment and for less consumption. So certainly minimalism, it goes hand in hand with that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean people take it on board. What you say has been true about our consumption for a long time, and we're still doing it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, is every single person in the United States going to become a minimalist? No, nope. I don't think so. But I do see our readers growing, the tiny house movement growing, all of these movements around the idea of simplicity or around the idea of minimalism. We are certainly seeing that growing. Will it continue to grow? Sure. It'll be bigger next year. How big is it going to get? I guess only time will tell.
Give us some more examples. What do you see happening? How are people expressing their minimalist attitude?
You know, we've seen factory workers and CEOs show up at the same exact event. And I think they tend to be asking the same question. You know, how do I live a more intentional life? How do I get more joy and satisfaction out of the way I'm living? And those questions manifest differently. The CEO at the event I was mentioning, he said he kept getting frustrated because the sixth TV in his fourth home kept going out, and it was infuriating him. And then at the same event, we had a factory worker who was, you know, trying to figure out how to pay the rent consistently. And so we have these examples of people who are still trying to live a more intentional life. And I think ultimately what it comes down to is being more responsible with the decisions we make. Now, Ryan and I aren't out here proselytizing. Like, we don't want to convert anyone to minimalism. We simply want to share a recipe that has worked really well for us. We've seen that recipe work for thousands of other people in hopes that you don't take the same recipe, but you tweeze out some ingredients from that recipe and you create your own recipe for a more intentional, a more simple life. And it's not a perfect life. It's definitely not an easy life, but it's a simpler life. And that's what we want people to walk away with.
Live in the moment. You guys right. Pursue your passions. Discover your mission, experience real freedom, create more, consume less. Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus with us today from Missoula, Montana. Look for their documentary coming out in a couple of months here, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things. You can see a little bit of the trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. Josh, Ryan, thank you very much for being with us today. Wonderful to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica, with help from Caroline Bechtel and Maeve Pages. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.